not the important factor. The important factor in my mind is quality.
Good afternoon, Long Island. I'm Eric Worley, and this is Chatterbox, one of five daily series that are geared to Long Islanders, so they can call us up with their questions and comments. Tomorrow, at this time, you can hear It's Some of Your Business with Art Diedrich, as he interviews business people from the community. And Wednesday is Second Bloom with Barbara Bloom, health-related topics. This Thursday on Primary, the program geared towards new music, Jim Caligiuri will be talking with the Long Island band industry, which is a record for Capitol Records, I believe. And on Friday, Bill Camardo will be in, talking with all kinds of interesting people. Today is Columbus Day, 1983, and it's 2:32 in the afternoon right now. Our guest today is Democratic candidate for the Suffolk County executive position, Mr. Patrick Halpin. Mr. Halpin, welcome to our program.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
And our telephone number, in case you'd like to call up and ask Mr. Halpin a question or two, is area code 516-246-7901. If perhaps we could just outline your political career so that people can get an idea of just where it is, what kind of experience you've had. At the moment, you are an assemblyman from Lindenhurst, I believe.
That's right.
Okay. How long have you held that position?
Well, I'm in my second term in the New York State Assembly. I was elected in a special election a year ago last April to fill a vacancy from... that was created when now County Legislator Lou Howard left the New York State Assembly to return to his post in the County Legislature. And then, of course, I had to run for a full two-year term last November.
Mm-hmm. I see. Before you got involved in the Assembly, what kind of political activity
did you have? Prior to being elected to the State Assembly, I was an elected official in the County Legislature. I served two terms there. I was elected in 1979 for the first time and then reelected overwhelmingly in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, though, my career in government and politics started out with Congressman Tom Downey, congressman from the 2nd Congressional District. I worked on his first campaign back in 1974. At the time, I was a senior in college going for a degree in government and economics in Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia. And it was the summer between my junior and senior year that Downey's campaign was in full bloom and very active in 1974. And I got involved in that campaign and stayed on and worked through the fall. I was fortunate in that I had a very understanding chairman of the political science department who ended up giving me all sorts of credit for that campaign experience. As a matter of fact, I got 12 hours of A for that campaign, and I suppose the fact that that election was one of the biggest upsets in the country may have had something to do with the grade I finally got.
Uh-huh. Now, Mr. Downey is notorious for his liberal views and disarmament opinions and things. Are you of the same mind?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it as being notorious. I think that Congressman Downey has shown that we have to be rational in the way we go about spending an enormous amount of money in defense. And while he has taken issue with the need to build a nuclear bomb on top of nuclear bomb, as I think all of us have, there comes a point when we're on the verge of self-destruction by having all of this nuclear capability, both on the part of the United States and the Soviet Union. And Downey, to his credit, has been one of the leading voices in Congress to urge a disarmament and a reduction in nuclear tensions, and has dedicated a large part of his career to doing that. I also feel the same way. As a matter of fact, I'm one of the co-sponsors in the New York State Assembly of a measure to have a referendum on the nuclear freeze throughout the state of New York, because I think we have to send a message to this administration in Washington, D.C., that these weapons that they insist on building ultimately are going to not only bankrupt our economy and our country, but will lead to our very destruction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's talk about some of the things that that you've done as assemblyman. One of, I suppose, the most famous issue is, of course, the bottle bill. Now, could you describe what kind of work you've done?
Oh, sure. You know, right now, as everyone is getting used to collecting their empties, they're probably ready to strangle me.
And so you're the one responsible for
that. I'm the one responsible for that. But actually, it's one of the things I'm most proud of. You know, very rarely do you have the opportunity to move an issue that affects so many people. And certainly the bottle bill, while significant, has affected a significant number of people throughout this great state by a couple of ways. First of all, we're just not going to see that type of litter on our roads and in our parks and on our beaches. And people are now getting into their routine of life to set aside those beverage containers. And what's happening with them? Very simply, they're being recycled, and we're going to be creating 50,000 new jobs throughout New York State because of that important legislation. What happened, though, in the history of the bottle bill is a very interesting study and how to move a controversial issue forward and make an impact was that back when I was in the county legislature, in wrestling with the problems of solid waste and protecting our environment here in Suffolk County, I became frustrated with the inability of the state legislature to move responsibly on mandatory deposit legislation. They literally kept it held in committee for 10 years, and the industry, because of their power and influence and enormous money that they've spent over the years, was able to kill the legislation each year up in Albany. Well, what happened was that Suffolk County took the lead, and we passed the bottle bill here in Suffolk, and literally embarrassed the state legislature into finally acting on it, because while it had enormous public appeal, fully two-thirds of the people in Suffolk County were in favor of a bottle bill.
Mm-hmm.
Because the industry, when we were fighting organized labor, we were fighting the beverage industry, the Anheuser-Busch's, Miller High Life, you name them, they were involved in the Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, I mean, all the big corporate interests here in America.
I remember the hearings in Suffolk County for the bottle bill were literally packed with representatives from these companies. Now, how credible is the opposition when they have people from out of state virtually voicing their opposition? Do you think that they played fair?
Well, do they play fair or do they not play fair? I mean, that's a tough judgment. I mean, I understand why they were out there. I mean, they were fighting for their economic interests. But I think in the long run, the arguments that were most credible to the county legislators who weren't going to be bought and paid for by special interests were the ones that came from the League of Women Voters, who was strongly in favor of. The editorial support that we received from newspapers all across Suffolk County was overwhelming. And the support that they got from their constituents, people who demanded that they finally do something about this form of litter.
Okay, we'll get back to this in a second. We have a telephone call. Again, our number is 246-7901. Our guest today on Chatterbox is Patrick Halpin, who's running on the Democratic ticket for Suffolk County Executive. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to know, my name is Larry Gelfin, Mr. Talkett. I'd like to know where Mr. Halpin differs from Mr. Cohallen on the question of Charles.
Well, my difference with Mr. Cohallen is pretty significant. I am opposed to Shoreham and have been throughout my career. However, I believe that eventually this plant is going to go online, and I think that we have to deal with it in a responsible way. Mr. Cohallen has spent $7 million fighting Shoreham, and he's got absolutely nothing to show for it. He wants to spend another $2.5 million next year. Most of that money is going to lawyers and consultants, and the ratepayers and the taxpayers simply haven't been protected. What I've said is the following. that since the federal government has granted a license for this thing, and ultimately if they approve the emergency plan that LOCO has now submitted to the NRC, we're going to have this in operation. So what are we going to do about it? Well, the first thing that has to happen is that I think there should be a full physical independent safety inspection of that facility to determine once and for all if it's been built the way it's supposed to, and that should be done separate and independent of LOCO and the NRC. The second thing is LOCO should not operate that plant, because even if you have a structurally sound plant in the hands of people who are incompetent or don't know what they're doing, it could pose some risks. So I think, and given the fact that LOCO has had so many problems over the years with managing their company properly, I frankly don't have any confidence in their ability to operate that thing properly. So the Power Authority, the state of New York, should operate Shoreham. And then finally, we have to get down with how we're going to address the economics of this Shoreham plant. And the first thing that has to happen is that LOCO should absorb all the cost overruns associated at Shoreham that they're responsible for. And the Public Service Commission is now doing that investigation into LOCO's mismanagement at that facility. And then finally, we have to work together to restructure the enormous debt that LOCO has accrued with this facility, because there's just no way we can absorb a 60% increase in rates without doing serious harm to Long Island's economy.
Mr. Halpin?
Yes, sir.
One more question. I heard you at the Civic Association in Setauket attack your opponent as being a part-time executive. You never got into the reasons why you say that. Can you answer it now?
Well, Mr. Cohallen, quite frankly, really hasn't been on the job. Anybody who covers Suffolk County, if you happen to be a member of a newspaper, an editorial board, knows that the only people you get comments from are his deputies. And the reason is that the county executive simply hasn't been there. He's been a part-time county executive who really hasn't addressed the other problems facing Suffolk County, like safe drinking water, the Southwest Sewer District, the problems of daycare, the problems at our community college, the problems of providing equal opportunity for our people. And those are issues that should be addressed, but unfortunately, this county executive really hasn't been all that attentive to those problems.
Now, regarding Shoreham, though, are we past the point of no return? There's absolutely no way this plant can be stopped. It's definitely going to open.
Well, I believe we are, and I think most people who on Long Island believe that we're past that point. And all you have to do is look at what's gone on. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission's Atomic Safety and Licensing Board just 2 weeks ago cleared the way for a low-power test and operation at that plant. And they rejected in the strongest of language the county's opposition. They said they misled, they distorted the record, they didn't even provide competent defense of their position. And the other thing is, back in December of 82, Congress unanimously, without one dissenting vote, changed federal law to say that utilities could submit directly to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission emergency plans. So it's clear to me that the issue of nuclear power and the issue of Shoreham is being settled in Washington. But that doesn't mean, though, that we don't have an obligation at this level of government to do things that are within our power. Now, it's within our power to prevent this from becoming an economic catastrophe, and it's within our power to make sure we have a competent operator of this facility. And those are the things I'm going to be fighting for.
Now, you brought up the fact of LOCO not being desirable as an operator of this plant. Do you see LOCO as incompetent?
I think that all you have to do is look at the record. Mm-hmm. This plant has gone from $300 million to $3.4 billion. If you look at their investments in upstate New York, they own 17% of another nuclear power plant under construction there called Nine Mile Two. And that's one facing the same financial difficulties that Shoreham is confronted with. And then there's the infamous Bochum uranium mine. I think the evidence is overwhelming that the management at LOCO has been less than desirable.
So what should be done?
Well, what should be done is that LOCO should be broken up. The Power Authority should ultimately take over the entire LOCO operation. But in the meantime, we should not, under any circumstances, let LOCO operate the Shoreham plant.
What is your opponent saying about the breakup of LOCO? Is that more or less
well,
the same thing?
Well, the difference between what Mr. Cohallen is saying and I've said is that he takes the position that he's going to fight and spend all this money to try to prevent Shoreham from going online. And while I'm just as opposed to Shoreham as he is, I think that we should be focusing our resources on fights that we have a chance to win. And I use this analogy. You know, someone who's an alcoholic will give you all sorts of reasons why they lost that job. They've been sick, their boss didn't like them, they lost interest in it. But until they get to the real problem, which is they're drinking, they're not going to solve it. It's the same thing with Shoreham. Until we get to the real problem, which is dealing with the economics and safe operation of this, what we will end up in the event that Cohalan is not successful, and I believe he's not going to be successful, is we're going to have Loco operating this plant with at least a 60% increase in rates. And those two things are totally unacceptable.
Let's go back to the phones. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to thank Mr. Helton for his updates on the bottle bill. But I got a question. Does he see any legislation coming up that would further it to other returnable items, packaging?
Very good question. Right now we're in a big transition period while store owners and the beverage industry is getting used to taking these returns back. And consumers are also getting used to the idea of sorting their empties and bringing them back. But I think eventually I would like to see it expanded to include liquor and wine bottles, as well as these fruit drinks and iced teas and lemonades and things like that, because if it applies to beer and soda, there's no reason why it shouldn't also apply to those other beverages.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
That's an interesting point. Now, iced tea is not covered on the bottle bill, but I know downstairs in the machines they have in this building, the price for everything went up 5 cents, including the iced tea. So how does that work?
Well, what's happened is that part of the industry is gouging on this. Mm-hmm. If you notice, the price has gone up for some beverages. And what they're doing is using the bottle bill as an excuse to jack up their prices. That, by the way, was the experience in other states, too. In Michigan, when their bottle bill went in effect, they had the same experience. But after a couple of months, the prices came back down again as everybody got used to it. It's the old supply and demand.
But how come the prices went down? Why wouldn't the manufacturers keep them up?
Well, what happened, it was similar to what happened when the price of coffee went up several years ago. Mm-hmm. People just stopped buying coffee. And a lot of people have cut down on their beverage consumption during this transition period. But fortunately, the marketplace has a way of getting even. And I suspect over the next couple of months, we'll see the prices stabilize.
Okay, again, 246-7901 is our telephone number. We're speaking with Patrick Halpin, the Democratic candidate for Suffolk County Executive. Let's go back to the phones. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Bill Anderson from Patchogue. I have a question for Assemblyman Halpin. Assemblyman, what do you think of Mr. Cohalan's CSEA and deputy sheriff's contract?
Now, those are the labor contracts which will probably go down in history as the most expensive, not only in Suffolk County, but probably throughout the country. Just a couple of aspects of them I object to particularly. One, with the CSEA contract, he had people negotiating those contracts who benefited from the terms of them, and that's unconscionable. There's no way that a union contract should apply to the political people who Mr. Cohalan appoints. Those contracts had raises of up to 70% in them over 3 years for certain county employees, and the terms of those contracts applied to the high-paid political people, and that just shouldn't have been. The other thing is, with the deputy sheriff's contract, you have a provision in there that gives them time and a half for the time that they spend traveling to and from work. Do you know how much that's going to cost the Suffolk County taxpayers? It's going to cost them over $840,000 a year in overtime pay. There's just no way we can afford that.
Thanks for calling, sir. I guess he's gone. Getting back to the main issue, would you say it's a really big issue, I guess, is a Shoreham plant.
Well, that is certainly...
I wouldn't say it's one issue, issue candidate.
Yeah, you know, what's happened, though, is that the county executive has tried to make it a one-issue campaign very cleverly. And if you look at his career over the years, when he ran against Tom Downey in 76, he had a one-issue campaign back then, too. He picked a fight with his Republican leader, Tony Pace, just before the election to show his independence and then ran against him. The interesting thing, though, is that he's since made up with him, and he wanted to make him chairman of the Suffolk County Water Authority. Now, 4 years ago, you remember what the big issue was back then?
What?
It was the Southwest Sewer District.
Uh-huh.
And what's happened there? The problems of the sewer district have gotten worse. The financial situation has been is terrible, and it's just been compounded over the last 4 years. So this year it's sure. But you know something? There are other issues. We should be talking about the welfare ghettos that we have here in Suffolk County. And I don't mean to raise the specter of an inner city, but do you know what they are? You have fully 70% of the people on welfare being single women who are heads of households. The feminization of poverty. We don't have adequate daycare. We've got children who are being left unattended. We also have a drinking water supply that's being threatened by toxic waste and by landfills that have poisonous leachate going into our drinking water. We should be talking about resource recovery as a way of diversifying our energy sources. Certainly, SHRM is important, but why aren't we also talking about wind power? And why aren't we talking about conservation? These are all things that are on my agenda as county executive, and I think those are things that should be debated in this campaign.
All right. If, in your opinion, what you're saying is true, that Cohalan is just saying one issue, just using one issue.
Well, have you heard any other issues?
Well, if he is doing this, you have to come back with a statement of your own. You can't ignore.
Oh, I have.
What I'm saying is, do you feel pressured to oppose him?
Oh no. As a matter of fact, I feel a tremendous responsibility to deal with this issue in a responsible and rational fashion because it's just that important. My plan will make sure that we have a safe operator at Shoreham and that this plant doesn't drive up our rates. Cohalan's opposition will only result in attorneys making more money, and we'll end up having Loco operate the plant with at least a 60% increase in rates. Because I don't think he's going to be successful.
What if the shareholders are held responsible, though, if the plant is closed?
Okay. That's fine. As a matter of fact, I have a bill in the state legislature that would mandate, in the event that this plant doesn't operate, that the shareholders bear the cost, not the ratepayers. But who's going to make that determination? The NRC? The NRC has cleared the way for the licensing of this plant. Loco owns and operates the plant. As soon as they get these generators fixed and they get them checked out by the NRC, they're going to turn it on at low power. The State Public Service Commission, are they going to do it? They haven't done it thus far. As a matter of fact, Shoreham is part of the state's energy master plan. So I think that it's unrealistic, and it's really deceiving the people into thinking that this plant is going to operate. Now, let's look at the motivation of why Mr. Cohalan has done this. When he first ran for office back in 1979, he was quoted in Newsday as saying that this plan is inevitable and already $2 billion has been spent on. Back in the Islip Bulletin, which is a newspaper in the town of Islip, he made the same claim. What do? Walk away from $2 billion? Well, since that time, Loco has spent another $1.5 billion on that plant. And it's too bad he didn't answer his own question back in 79 because he could have saved us a lot of money. This thing is clearly politically motivated.
What was your position at that time?
My position has always been that we have to make sure that this is the safest plant possible. And if it's not safe, it shouldn't operate. But we have to be prepared to prove our case. And that's why I've always supported a full physical independent safety inspection of that plant. And I'll still fight for that, whether I'm in a county executive or in a state legislature, because I think that's essential. And then we have to deal with the economics of this. So that's always been my position on it. And the other thing is, when it comes to emergency planning, I think that the county should be doing emergency planning and not Loco.
Okay, let's go to this call. Okay, there we go. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, this is Sam Roberts from Wading River. I have a question for Mr. Halpin. I got a piece of mail from Mr. Cohalan a couple of weeks ago, and it talked about wanted to know my position on Shoreham and had a little postcard in it, and I was supposed to return it to Mr. Cohalan. My question is, was that the county mailing or was that a Cohalan campaign mailing? I mean, did I, as a taxpayer in Wading River, did I have to pay for a mailing that seemed to me fairly politically motivated?
Unfortunately, you did, but that's not the first time. That mailing cost Suffolk County taxpayers about $20,000, and it wasn't the first time that Mr. Cohalan has used taxpayers' money to promote his position. As a matter of fact, he's been sending mailings out to businessmen and others for the last couple of months promoting his position on this. And I think that if he's interested in public financing of campaigns, as I am, he should come out and endorse the legislation up in the state legislature that would mandate that, but he shouldn't be using this money to promote his personal position on this issue.
Thanks for calling, sir. USB, you're on the air.
I'd like to ask Mr. Helton a question and then follow it up, if I may.
Okay.
Would you, if elected, drop Suffolk County's suit against Shoreham?
Yeah, I think that the suit against Shoreham is not going to stand up. You know, the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board has rejected in the strongest of terms Suffolk County's opposition. They said that they deceived them, they misled them. They actually said that they deliberately put in the wrong citations. And if you're a lawyer, if you're familiar with how you prepare briefs, that kind of thing is not going to stand up for very long in the court or in courts of law. What I think we should be doing is taking our resources and putting them in to make sure that we fight for a competent operator. That's why I want the Power Authority to operate this. And taking our resources and spending the money to make sure that this plant doesn't bankrupt us and drive up our electric rates to the point where it's going to drive away homeowners and businesses.
My worry is the competency of the local officials now in power. You know, I agree with a lot of what you stand for, but I would vote against you just because of this one issue.
Why?
Why?
Yes.
Because it's overwhelming the most important issue right now in Long Island.
But think about this. Mr. Cohallen has spent $7 million, and what does he have to show for it? I don't think he's got anything to show for it.
How many billions has locals spent, and what do they have to show for it?
They've spent a tremendous amount of money. You're absolutely right. But he has spent $7 million, and he wants to spend another $2.5 million. And in the end, what happens if he loses? Now, keep in mind that the federal government preempts every aspect of nuclear power. And if he fails, what you're going to end up with is Loco operating this plant, and you're going to end up with at least a 60% increase in rates. On the other hand, my plan, which is very reasonable and responsible and, most importantly, doable, will end up having the Power Authority operate this plant. And they operate two nuclear power plants. One is very similar to this one. It's an 800-megawatt GE boiling water reactor.
But is it on an island?
No,
half the population is on the other side.
It's similar to this. It's on water. It's up in Oswego. It's right next to the campus there, as a matter of fact. It's not far.
So you have exits on every direction.
But
here you have one exit.
Just let me finish. They have never had a problem at that plant. They also operate Indian Point 2, which is in an area just as congested, if not more, than Shoreham is. Now, there's no question that Shoreham was built in the wrong place.
I'm talking about congestion.
I'm talking about routes of escape. I'm talking about moving traffic in and out of there. And where you have at Indian Point 2, the Power Authority operates that facility, and they've never had a problem there. That's why I want to see the Power Authority operate this thing, because they're a public agency. They're not in the business of making money by providing power. They're just in the business of giving us safe and affordable electricity. And I have much more faith in
them. You say that the plant shouldn't have been done in the beginning, that it was the wrong spot for it, but yet you support it. You know, when the majority of the people on this island would rather see it stop at this point before any more money.
What I'm saying is that as much as I oppose this, and I do oppose it, I understand that it's going to go online because we have a federal government that's very pro-nuclear. The Reagan administration is determined to get... It's not giving in. Actually, it's making sure that we fight the proper fight. You see, what Cohallen wants to do is to give all this money to lawyers, and the ratepayers won't be protected. And in the end, neither will be the homeowners and the taxpayers. But what he should be doing is fighting to make sure that we have a competent operator. He should also be fighting for a full physical independent inspection. He's not doing that anymore. And he should also be fighting to make sure that this doesn't bankrupt our economy. Because the consequences are, if he fails... Now, keep in mind, this is a matter that's regulated up and down by the federal government. And in the event that he fails, We're going to have Loco operating this plant with at least a 60% increase in rates. And I know I'm redundant, but I don't think people appreciate the consequences.
Loco fails, then the consequences are much more than monetary. You know, they involve human life.
Well, that's why Loco shouldn't operate that plant.
But that's inconsistent with your platform.
How is that inconsistent?
You're saying that Loco should not operate the plant. You're putting the blame on Loco.
Of course, the issue is Loco. Loco is the one that put us in this.
It's up to us to get us out of it.
Of course. And I've got the solution to getting us out of it.
Letting Loco go online.
No.
How can you say that we can have a safe plan when it, you know, you've seen the Long Island Expressway at 6:30 in the morning?
Of course. I'm very familiar with the Long Island Expressway and all of Long Island. But I think you have to appreciate the fact that in the event that emergency planning, first of all, is much more than evacuation, although evacuation is a significant part of it. It has to do with assessing the extent of a radiological emergency. Public education is another big part of it. Determining who's responsible and what response at what level of government should be made in the event that there's an emergency is another critical aspect of emergency planning. And by simply not participating in emergency planning, what you're doing is abdicating your responsibility and leaving it to a utility that none of us have any faith in.
But don't you see this as part of an overall plan to stall, to keep Loco from going online, and to eventually maybe turn the tide completely?
Well,
I mean, you've got to take some approach to stopping it.
How is it going to turn the tide? They just got approval for a low-power license by the Atomic Safety and Licensing Board, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is going to give them that final authority as soon as the generators are fixed. So you're going to have low-power operation at that plant. Do we agree that that's a fact?
I agree, but people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King have achieved their ends by non-cooperation, and I see that the county is doing that now. They're not cooperating with Loco. They're not cooperating with the NRC.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, seems the only route at this point.
Yeah, but if you look at where Gandhi or Martin Luther King, more specifically, took their battle, when Martin Luther King was fighting for voting rights and for civil rights, he took his battle to Washington, D.C., and
started with the bus boycott in Montgomery.
That's right, but who controlled the buses?
The blacks.
No. Who controlled the buses?
Said, no.
The city of Montgomery, the point I'm making is that the people who control the issue of nuclear power and the licensing of these plants is in Washington, D.C.
Should that be? That's the question I have.
Should that be? As we look at this whole Shoreham experience, I would say no. I don't think that should be the case. But you know something? Why wasn't this a big issue in last year's congressional races around here? Or why wasn't this an issue in the last presidential?
I don't think the litigation was far enough along to make it an
issue. But it should have been. You know, Shoreham is not a new plan. It's not something that just popped up yesterday. It's been around for 15 years. And what I resent particularly are these politicians who've been around for that same period of time, and now that the plant is finished, they're out there leading the charge. Even if they know, and they know privately, and Cohalan, and I've got people who've told me this, who've asked him directly, has admitted that the reason why he's doing this is because his pollsters advised him to do it. They're doing it for purely political reasons. And what I resent is that good-thinking people like yourself are being used in this process.
I think the politicians should pay more attention to the polls. I mean, isn't that what the system's supposed to be based on, what we want in our elected officials? I mean, I agree with just about every issue that you've raised, except this one, which I don't see any agreement in.
Sir, we have to get on to another call. I'll let Mr. Halpin
answer
your question. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
You know, I think the point is that this plant is not a new plant. And, you know, back when I first got in the county legislature, I was part of a group that opposed the siting of two nuclear plants out in Jamesport, which is in Riverhead. And we were able to block the siting and the construction of those facilities at a time when that was doable. And at the time Shoreham was being sited, Peter Cohalan wasn't opposing it. He was Islip Town Supervisor at the time.
All right. Well,
nobody was opposing. At the time, up until when Peter Cohalan ran for election 4 years ago, He was in favor of Shore.
Whether or not it's being used as an issue for political purposes now, the fact is it is an issue. Now, what I'd like to know is, you say that you don't think it should be controlled in Washington. You think it should be more of a localized thing, who controls nuclear power plants. Will you, if you are elected, work towards bringing that kind of control over here?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the local government's got to be directly involved in this, and this is an illustration, unfortunately, after the fact, of what happens when you get the federal government preempting us. I think we also should realize that this will probably, hopefully, be the last nuclear power plant, you know, ever to be built on Long Island. I know it's the only one, but Loco wanted to build two more. Fortunately, we were able to block those two out in Jamesport. But nuclear power has never lived up to its promise. These plants cost too damn much. You know,
do they cost a lot to operate when they do?
No, actually, they're fairly inexpensive to operate because nuclear fuel is very cheap, particularly when you're replacing electricity that's been produced by oil. But the problem with nuclear power is that these plants now cost billions of dollars to construct, and the payback just doesn't make it economically feasible for us to ever get involved in these things.
Okay, now a couple of seconds ago you said that you would in fact try to get it more localized. How is that done?
Well, there are a number of ways that we have to do that. First of all, I think that we have to, in conjunction with the state, do this full physical independent safety inspection, separate of the federal interest and the pro-nuclear interests at Loco. Because, you know, something this gentleman before who called in and who was opposed to Shoreham, as I am, raised a very valid point. You know, I feel that same sense of frustration, like we're losing control of our lives and our community. But if we went in there and did a full physical independent inspection, we found proof of poor construction, we could then go back to the NRC and they would be compelled to review that evidence. And if they didn't satisfactorily deal with that evidence that we presented to them, we could also go to the federal courts. But that inspection hasn't been done. And Culhallan, unfortunately, has moved away from supporting that. I think that that's absolutely essential if we want to make sure one way or another about this plant.
Okay, I just wanted to say at this point, you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. The program is Chatterbox. I'm Eric Corley. My guest today is Democratic candidate for Suffolk County Executive Patrick Halpin. And let's go right back to the phones. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is John Smith from Support. Could I have a question for Assemblyman Halpin?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, before I ask my question, I'd just like to make a comment to the previous caller. And I was very upset by what the caller was saying, in that since County Executive Culhallan's been in office, the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant has gone up $2 million in cost.
That's $2 billion.
$2 billion, excuse me. And it wasn't only until last year that Mr. Culhallan has come out and publicly stated his stance against Shoreham. And that I commend you, Mr. Halpin, in that you've been the only elected official on Long Island that has proposed any energy alternatives or has tried to develop a policy whereby the residents of Suffolk County can find means of getting away from the dependency of Loco and look for other energy alternatives such as PASNY power and that sort. But getting back to the question I do want to ask, is that I received a few days ago a piece of political literature from Mr. Culhallan, and one of the things he said in his literature was that he has replaced political favorites with honest, competent, and professional men and women. Yet recently I read a Newsday editorial that said that he was looking to appoint legislator John Werenberg as deputy police commissioner, which I've heard has no experience in the law enforcement area. Would you address that question?
Yeah, that's been another claim of this administration. And if you look at the record really doesn't compare with the assertion. That's true. He does want to appoint County Legislator John Werenberg as Deputy Police Commissioner. He's got no real police experience. As a matter of fact, there are many people in Suffolk County who feel that he's been antagonistic to women and minorities and to Jews. And we just shouldn't be putting in people in sensitive positions like a deputy police commissioner who don't have law enforcement background. We have a professional police department, and we should maintain that professionalism up and down the line. If you look at the Suffolk County Water Authority, now water is a very critical issue in Suffolk County, as it ought to be and should be. He wants to continue to politicize the Suffolk County Water Authority by putting the ISLIP Republican leader in there, Mr. Anthony Pace, as chairman of the Water Authority. I'm committed to bringing trained water resource professionals in there, because I think that water is one of the most important things that we have to preserve and protect. And our Water Authority can be doing a lot more in that way if we eliminate the politicalization of that department. If you look at some of the other departments, he's used it to give former elected officials posts. As a matter of fact, a former town supervisor in Brookhaven, Mr. Lefkowitz, is now working in the county attorney's office, as is former county legislator John Finnerty. This is like a place for unemployed politicians to go. And that certainly doesn't live up to that so-called promise of professionalism.
Are you aware that you have not received the endorsement of various civil rights groups? And I know one of the reasons I've heard was that you don't support gay rights. Is that true? Or?
Well, I'm going to be receiving the support of many civil rights groups, and we'll be announcing that next week. Uh-huh. I've got a very strong record when it comes to human rights and civil rights. I supported legislation outlawing the discrimination on the basis of marital status and sex. I've also supported legislation that would help battered and abused women. I'm a supporter of ERA. I'm a pro-choice elected official who supported women's right to an abortion. So I disagree with that assertion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to the phones. USB, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. This is Bill from Wisconsin, and I wanted to ask Mr. Halpin a question. And that even though Mr. Cohalan seems to be doing this politically, saying that he's against Shoreham, how come, except Mr. Cohalan, no one is taking the issue that the safety on the mound is the most important thing when it comes to Shoreham, and whether politically we can have another agency run the power plant? What difference does that make if it's safety that's the most important issue? I mean, you say you're going to bring in this other entity.
Yeah, well, safety has got to come first, uh-huh. And that's why I want to have a full physical independent inspection of that, uh-huh. To really go over that facility and make sure that it's built properly. But, you know, it's just not good enough to claim that you're opposed to Shoreham. You have to be willing to prove one way or another whether this thing is built properly. And I'm prepared to do that. But safety has got to come first. And if this plant isn't built properly, it shouldn't operate. It's just that simple.
But what about the evacuation plan? It was written into the local laws that if a feasible evacuation plan couldn't be drafted, that the plant couldn't open. And now that seems to be changing.
Well, first of all, Mr. Cohalan wants to do a 20-mile evacuation plan. And the problem with that is that it puts the people who are at greatest risk, those who live within 5 miles of that plant, in a position where it would be impossible for them to get out. And that's why I really strongly object to what he's doing. You know, if there is a catastrophic accident at Shoreham, and that is extremely remote, but we have to plan for it, there's the people who would be at greatest risk would be those that would live just outside the plant to 5 miles. And we've got to make sure that we can move them out. The other people beyond that can be protected in other ways, through sheltering, through a variety of responses. But, you know, how many people know that? And the reason why they don't know that is because another part of emergency planning has to do with public education, where people get the straight, honest truth about what their particular response has to be. And Mr. Cohalan, by coming up with this 20-mile emergency plan, has totally politicized this thing. And I resent that. Because not only
20 miles, you know that if there was ever a meltdown at that reactor, that, I mean, Shoreham is built right on the water. I mean, it's about
all the plants,
the water.
Every plant in America and every plant in the world is built on water, because they need water for cooling purposes.
But I think what the caller means is that this is on an island, and that makes it a bit different.
There's an underground water system throughout this whole island.
No, well, you see, you're missing my point. My point is that those who would have the greatest risk by the radiation that would come from that are those that would live within 1 to 4 miles. The facts are that beyond that, and I don't want to get into a long debate over this because this is an issue that right now is being reviewed by the NRC, and what they're doing is looking at a loco-only plan, which obviously could not be nearly as good if Suffolk County participated, but federal law says that utilities can submit plans directly to the NRC now. But what Mr. Gohalen did by coming up with this 20-mile plan is that by moving people out 10, 15, 20 miles out by implying to them that they've got to evacuate, you're going to be clogging up the roads so that those people who live near the plant would find it impossible to move. And those are the people who would have faced the greatest health risk. And you know something?
I have another part of a question. The basic premise behind this whole thing is that if these people decided to build this plant in 1968 and took the whole island with them, spinning this web that we're going to need all this electrical demand and this and that, which is a bunch of nonsense, you know, why do the ratepayers on Long Island have to have this albatross around their neck? You know, they're going to try to cut down a 60% rate increase down to probably 30% or something like that. I mean, I think it's totally ridiculous. Why can't we, like Grumman, buy our power from the Niagara Power Authority and ship it down here a lot cheaper? I mean, that seems to be the most feasible way of doing things.
Yeah, it is, and we should be getting our fair share of the state's cheap power. Grumman is, though, keep in mind, is getting their power, their inexpensive power, from another nuclear power plant in upstate New York called the Fitzpatrick plant, which is operated by the New York State Power Authority. But you raise a very valid point, and that is we should be diversifying our energy sources, and we shouldn't be dependent upon these big power plants like Shoreham. And I'm the only person who's put out a comprehensive energy plan that addresses that. We should be getting our fair share of the state's inexpensive power but we have to do two things. We have to build two transmission lines, one under the Long Island Sound, and the Power Authority is prepared to do that, and I'm going to work with them to see that happen, and also another transmission line from Marcy to Fishkill, which opens up the lower Hudson Valley. And if we do that, we'd be able to get enough cheap power to stabilize our electric rates. The other thing we have to do is to really get into a comprehensive system of resource recovery. Because if we burnt our garbage, we can meet 12% of our energy needs. And then we should look at things like wind power. You know, in the state's energy master plan, they suggest that we should be building some windmills up along the North Shore, where you have pretty strong prevailing winds. And all of those things combined would move us in a direction where we're diversifying our energy sources. And that, combined with energy conservation, would really put us in a very advantageous position in the 1990s and into the next century to really be competitive with any region in this country. And that's what I want to see happen.
But why the need for Shoreham, then, if all those other alternative sources are there and feasible?
Well, the problem, the reason why we got into this whole Shoreham box is because back in the late 60s, we had a federal government that was encouraging utilities all across America to build these plants. And Loco at that time was getting a lot of electricity from coal-fired plants. And if you think we've got environmental problems with nuclear power, they're worse with coal-fired plants. Like acid rain and other emissions coming out of those things are just horrendous. The other thing is that in 1973, we had an Arab oil embargo, you know, just 10 years ago. And Loco is the only utility in America its size that's completely dependent upon oil. So that's why we got into that. Unfortunately, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. It's like how I feel today after having watched the Giants yesterday. You know, why didn't they do some other things on the field? Because they could have won that game. Well, you know, we have to deal with reality, and just like the Giants can't replay that game, we've got to deal with the fact that Shoreham is going to go online and make sure that it doesn't drive up our rates and make sure we have a competent operator.
Sir, we have to go to another call. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
We were speaking about evacuation. Now, we're talking 5, 10, 20 miles. Now, if in fact we should limit it to 5 or 10 miles, can you, in the event of a meltdown, guarantee the safety of somebody living 20 miles away? Is it clearly defined who's safe and who isn't?
Look, as county executive, I'm prepared to move within that 10-mile zone. And that's a commitment that I've made because I want the people to know that their safety is just as important as my safety. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure our people are protected. But you know something? We won't stand a chance if we don't have our county police department and our health department and all the county resources working to protect our people.
Okay,
that's what I think we have to be doing.
But looking back on all this, where we have to be talking about how we're going to get all these people out of the island, is it worth it? Is it worth it to be thinking about evacuation? Are we getting anything out of it?
Well, you know, every day we're faced with risks. And as a society, we make all sorts of judgments.
But should we be faced with this kind of
risk? If you travel down the LIE, every now and then you see these large tanker trucks, which are liquid natural gas trucks. Do you know that if there's a leak with one of those trucks, it could put in jeopardy a 20 square mile area because you have liquid natural gas that's highly concentrated, and it's very explosive. That's a fact. It's going up and down the LIE. But as a society, we've made the decision that, you know, liquid natural gas is an important fuel for us to have. Well, as a society, this country has said that nuclear power is something that we have to have. Now, my big beef with nuclear power is not so much the safety, it's the economics of it. The economics are terrible. They're going to bankrupt communities, just like if we do nothing here, this is going to bankrupt Long Island. And we have to address that. We also have to be very concerned about the safety. But it doesn't pose as great a risk as many people would lead us to believe.
If the year was suddenly reverted back to the early 60s...
We would never be talking about Shoreham today.
Okay, let's go to a call. USB, you're on the air.
Hello, my name is Sue Engel, and I live in Comac. It's very nice that you were talking about the women's ERA before, but what about someone like me who went through the CETA program and now works in the HOPOG area, and I have a couple of kids? What do you plan to do to help someone like me?
What do you do in HOPOG?
I work in a factory.
Uh-huh. You know, I want to develop a comprehensive system of daycare. How old are your children, Sue?
Oh, my children are 10, 8, and 4.
Yeah. You know, you're very typical of many of the women who are now working in Suffolk County. And many of them have got children who are in preschool age and also who are in elementary school. And what I want to see happen here in Suffolk County, and in my Suffolk County, we're going to see a comprehensive system of daycare and after-school care that meets the needs of working families and working women. Because that is one of those needs that is more apparent every day. As I travel across Suffolk County, I'm very concerned that many children are being left unattended or with a neighborhood babysitter, and they're not really getting that early childhood education that's so critical to their development. And what I plan to do is to work with our existing daycare centers to expand their programs and also work with private industry, particularly those in the HOPOG industrial areas and all across Suffolk County, to set up a comprehensive system of daycare so that working families will have a safe, secure place for their children.
Okay, but what has Cohallen done? Has he done anything?
What he tried to do back when I was in the county legislature was to eliminate two-thirds of the daycare slots. And as far as expanding the program, he just hasn't been interested in that.
And, you know, this bus system I use occasionally to get to work, but, you know, sometimes it's not that reliable. Do you have any plans for that?
Yeah, you know, the big problem with our bus system is that you still have to, if you want to get from one end of Suffolk to the other, like from Babylon to Riverhead, you have to spend a day plotting out your course on about a half a dozen different maps to try to figure out how you're going to make all the connections. There are a number of things I would like to see happen. First of all, we need a master map so that anybody who wants to get to any point in Suffolk County can simply have one map that's simple to read so that they'll know how to get from point A to point B without having to be a navigator on an airplane. The other thing is that our bus system really doesn't start early enough to help commuters. For example, in my area, the buses don't get on the road until 7 o'clock in the morning. Most of the commuters have already gone in their way or are on their way to New York City. And then the bus system shuts down at 6 o'clock. and most of the commuters aren't home. So we're missing a large pool of people that would otherwise be using public transportation.
There's one other thing that certainly gets me as an occasional bus rider, and that's the fact that you can only transfer between certain buses, county-subsidized routes. I don't even know what that means. Now, how come I have to pay 75 cents to get on another bus, and, you know, if it was a different route, I wouldn't have to pay at all?
That's right. It's just very confusing.
Is there a solution to that?
Well, yeah, I think there is a solution to that. I'm going to look very carefully at what Nassau County has done. They've had a very successful suburban bus system. And I think that that's something that we have to explore here, because I'm not so sure that this program that the county executive has embarked on has really worked that successfully.
Okay. We've spent a lot of time talking about Mr. Culhallan. Now, he is not your only opponent. There's someone running in the independent department,
right.
The party, I'm sorry. Do you care to say anything about that, Ken?
Robert Matheson?
Yes.
I don't know. You know, why don't you invite him here and have folks talk to him?
We intend to invite all candidates, actually.
Very good.
Now, at our town meeting on the air 2 weeks ago on USB, Mr. Matheson was voicing, it seemed, vehement support of the Shoreham plant, and I believe he even accused the people who want to close the plant down of being un-American, and, well, do you have any feelings
on
that?
Well, you know, for those people that are listening, there is one pro-Shoreham candidate, and that's Robert Matheson. He's taken a position that he wants that plant to operate, and he wants Loco to operate it. I disagree with him. I just don't think he's giving a real responsible approach to dealing with that problem.
Uh-huh. Okay, we got time for a couple of more calls. Our number is 246-7901, and let's go to this one. USB, you're on the air.
Hello. I don't know if you intentionally did this, Mr. Halpern, but you totally skirted the issue of gay rights in Suffolk County. I'm wondering if you could comment on that. You said that you had gotten support from a number of, I guess, community groups, and you sort of like avoided that.
Yeah, so I voted against the gay rights bill in the state assembly.
Okay, can you explain why?
Well, I think that, you know, where I was sent up there to represent some of the views of my constituents, and, you know, frankly, the bill, I thought, didn't have a chance of passing, and it was a one-house bill in the state assembly, and you know, we have a situation where a city like New York is incapable of passing a bill like that. There was just no way it was ever going to become law in New York State.
Thanks for calling, sir. Okay, we have time for, I believe, one more call, maybe two. USB, you're on the air.
Hi. I hate to get back to Shoreham, but it's an issue that really, you know, I'm concerned about. I want to ask Mr. Halpern that because the administration is committed to nuclear technology, and obviously Washington is eager to get Shoreham on the line, does it follow that given any population or group of, you know, citizens that are opposed to a plant, whether or not they want one, you know, or not, that it follows that they're going to have to get one?
Well, you know, you raise a very valid point. And a couple of years ago, we were able to block construction of two nuclear power plants out at Jamesport at a time when that was doable. And a good friend of mine, John Donahue, who used to be in the county legislature and was very active in that effort of blocking Jamesport, made a very good point to me one day recently. He said, you know, Pat, he said, I'm opposed to nuclear power. And he said, back when I was in the county legislature 6 years ago, so we really led the effort in blocking the two plants out of Jamesport. He said, but as far as Shoreham was concerned, even back then, everyone said it was too late to stop Shoreham and that we should be trying to figure out the economics of it, because the plant, just as it was pretty far along then, it's even further along now.
What year was that?
Back in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, did you hear from Peter Culhallan? Did you hear from all these politicians? No, they were all incredibly...
I'll be really frank with you. I was a student upstate, okay? Yeah. My husband and I were married about 4 years ago. We returned to Long Island. We were living out in Santa Maria's, and quite by accident, okay, I was taking a drive when I saw this monstrosity in Shoreham. And I came back and I said, you know, where have we been? There's this gigantic thing there, and I think it's a nuclear power plant. And that's how I found out that there was one.
Well, you know, the other
subsequently,
thing. Right.
My sister, who lives outside the Harrisburg area, and this is what primarily concerns me, is that you said that the 20-mile evacuation really isn't important. However, she lives in Glen Rock, Pennsylvania, and she's about 25 miles away.
Yeah.
And I have two nephews that were children at the time. And I wonder, you know, now, as the years pass, what effects the radiation will have on them. And I, it sounds like I'm really being frightened for nothing, but I have, you know, a friend that a couple of people that I've known that have had leukemia and died because of it. And it's something that really does frighten me.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so Mr. Halpern will have to answer this rather quickly.
Very briefly.
Thanks for calling.
There are a lot of other people who have had those same concerns around the Harrisburg area, and the Pennsylvania Health Department has done numerous studies on the impact of that and have found that people are pretty safe and there have been no incidents of increases in leukemias or others. But they should keep studying because it's important, and it's important to assure the public that their health is being protected.
Okay, I want to thank you, Patrick Halpern, Democratic candidate for Suffolk County Executive, for stopping by our studios today, and hopefully we'll be talking with you again before the election, as well as other candidates. I'd like to remind our listeners that we have talk shows like this every afternoon of the week from 2:30 to 3:30. Tomorrow afternoon you can catch It's Some of Your Business with Art Dietrich, who will be talking with various business people. And we have programs all throughout the week, and you are invited to call us up with your opinions and questions. We'll be back again next week with Chatterbox, Monday at 2:30 p.m. We'll be talking to another interesting person, so be sure to give us a call then. Thank you, and good afternoon.